This is Sierra Dahl with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum, and today we have a discussion on smart meters and smart grid. Michael Walton is from Green Spaces in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and David Kay is over at Cornell University. So, David, why don't you go ahead and start us out with a beginning conversation here about what's happening in that area on smart grids and smart meter, whatever you've got.
Sure. I have a few things to say about this. I will note that I am with the Community and Regional Development Institute of Cornell, and I'm an affiliate with the Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future, and a lot of my involvement with this issue comes through work other people are doing that's supported by the university and the utility and some community groups. So, I'm kind of saying I don't consider myself by any means a deep expert in smart meters at all, but what I do know is about an experiment essentially that's going on in a county that we on Cornell's campus as academics are participating in and paying a lot of attention to trying to help evaluate. So about a year or so, roughly a year ago, the utility Avangrid, which is a Spanish company that is owned by Iberdrola, a multinational, which owns our local utilities, and in our instance, those are known as New York State Electric and Gas and Rochester Electric and Gas. So it started an experiment here in Cornell's backyard in the city of Ithaca and in some nearby towns of installing smart meters in about 12,400 homes. And that process, the process of actually switching out our installation, has gone relatively smoothly. You know, there's a lot of interest and concern in our community, which is the university community, is simultaneously very favorably disposed to, you know, energy conservation in general and renewable energy initiatives, but also has a fairly high level of suspicion of things that large national, multinational organizations might be involved in doing in your home. So the actual rollout was voluntary. People could opt out of this program, but I think most people have not chosen not to opt out. I mean, by far the majority have had these meters installed. There's some technology involved, which I don't know a lot about, but have backup information about. I think the most important element of what this is supposed to enable people to do is better energy management, both in front and back of the meter. I know a little more about the homeowner perspective, the customer perspective. I don't really know much about what the utility is planning on doing with the information that they're able to gather specifically, but there is an accompanying website. If you have one of these meters in your home, you can go to the website and essentially get pretty close to real-time tracking of where and how you use energy in different areas of your home, estimating to some extent different kinds of appliances and what they use. And you can manage to some extent your use over the internet, and I assume that capacity will increase significantly over time. And you can also become eligible for a time of day pricing program, which I don't think is actually really fully implemented yet, but is a big part of what the utility is interested in, is in trying to get the customer base to shift time of day usage in a way which is not only a one-shot deal, but can be managed and changed through incentives over time. I think there's been, you know, sort of at a sort of an evaluation level. There are a lot of people that have much higher expectations of what this technology and interface can accomplish compared to what's happened already in a fairly short time period. There has been some pushback on the part of some people locally, particularly around concerns around radio frequencies and privacy issues. But it has, and you know, so far it hasn't been overwhelming. I think our utilities and many utilities are essentially expecting to go this route in the fairly near future. I know that Avangrid, Iberdrola are planning within these utility areas within a fairly short time period to expand this prototype to, which is just, as I said, a few thousand customers. They're planning to try and take it within a year or two to their entire customer base. So really what they're doing is trying to learn in a small area pros and cons and then how to take it larger. I think a lot of our sort of sustainability activists are a little disappointed, who have been following us, are a little disappointed that the information that you can learn so far from the website is not really all that useful or helpful or a big incentive to change behavior, but most people are still waiting to see what might, you know, how this might develop over time. Is that enough, Sierra?
No, that's a good start, for sure. And Michael, why don't you go ahead and have a little bit of a discussion about what's happening over in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, so I'm Michael Walton. I'm the Executive Director at Green Spaces. We are a sustainability nonprofit based in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Chattanooga is on the Georgia-Tennessee border, about 2 hours north of Atlanta, 2 hours southeast of Nashville. We're involved with a number of different partners that are in the microgrid space. The most significant is our local power company, EPB, which is a distributor. TVA does generation and transmission, and then they work with like 150 local power companies that do distribution. EPB had a project underway back in 2008 to build out a fiber optic backbone for their electric grid for resilience, and managed to get one of the ARRA grants. Since it was already something they were working on, they were able to accelerate that and basically install gigabit fiber optics throughout their entire service territory. And so that's done a number of things for them. Most immediately, it controlled a series of interrupters that are placed throughout the network. And so they've designed basically like backdoors into various parts of the grid. And then these interrupters all talk to each other so that they are able to sort of set up little microgrids within EPB's larger grid. And so if the power goes, or if a tree goes down on a power line, normally power goes out downstream and upstream to the nearest substation until somebody either calls and tells them where the tree is, or, you know, they roll a truck and just go search for it. And then they fix it and then they get everybody back up that's on that branch. In Chattanooga, what happens is if that tree goes down, the power does the same thing, goes out downstream and upstream, but the interrupters are communicating through the gigabit fiber optic network and talking to each other. And so they can say, look, I've got power this way, but not this way. And then the other one says, well, I've got power this way and not this way. And so they reconnect 95% of the branch, with the only part that's out being the part that's directly affected. And so not only do you get more resilience that way, because everybody else's power basically just flickers if anything happens at all, but they also know where the tree is. So they know exactly where to go to address the problem and get it fixed. So because of that technology, EPB was the first major peer certified utility in the country, which is performance excellence and electricity renewal. And it's like LEED for utilities. It's administered by GBCI and it has, you know, sustainability metrics and goals. But it's really about that sort of like smart grid capability. To that end, they've also been using smart meters. They don't have those throughout the entire network yet. They're sort of working on that in phases. But I think most of their customers have smart meters at this point that they track to with 15-minute intervals, again, through the smart grid. But it provides extremely rich data, which we use. So our organization does energy efficiency programming and among other things, but we can track the effectiveness of that energy efficiency program because of the capabilities of that smart grid. When we send our data sets to consultants, they just sort of like flip out just because of how good quality the data is. Oak Ridge National Labs is also working with EPB on sort of leveraging the technology and then also thinking about sort of the next generation utility of integrating renewables and distributed storage into that so that it can create a more robust mesh grid. The other big thing that it's allowed EPB to do is decouple their profit. Or their revenue. So they have, or because of the gigabit fiber optics, they're able to sell communication services to their customers. So customers can buy internet, TV, phone from their electric company, basically. And unsurprisingly, the electric company likes that, you know, because everybody pays the same amount every month, no matter how much TV they consume or internet they consume or phone they consume, they pay the same amount every month, which is great if you're trying to pay off infrastructure. And so that has, I think, made them a little bit more strategic and forward-thinking in the energy space. And so as we're working on developing net zero energy, single-family, multifamily, residential, and commercial, as well as developing community solar, our local power companies is trying to facilitate that, and they're trying to figure out how they can create a energy as a service option for developers rather than selling energy as a commodity. And that's sort of what we're working through right now on a couple of different projects. I think I'll just leave it with that.
All right, good information on both cases here. So I'm going to open it up to anybody who'd like to make comments. Rob Hammond, I see you're on here. Do you have anything to add as far as California goes on this topic?
No, not right away. I'll listen some more and then contribute.
Okay. Anybody else? Tom Stanton, anything to add on this? Are you there? Yeah, I know Tom's probably listening right now. Okay, Karen, how about you?
Well, I tuned in just toward the end of the last speaker's comments, and so I probably my main question is I'm going to have to go back and listen to the first part of the conversation before I have any questions. But it sounded very interesting. I assume that this is a municipal utility.
Uh-huh. That's correct.
Yeah. I like the, I think the the functionality of smart meters really needs to be enabled by smart other things that the utility does in using the data and especially real time data. That doesn't seem to be happening out in California. The smart meter data may be used, but there's no visibility to how it's used by electricity customers. We get reports, and we can go online and find our own profiles and look a lot of detail about our own energy use. But it doesn't seem to be influencing our investor-owned utility to change anything in terms of how it runs its efficiency programs or anything else. As a matter of fact, I was talking yesterday to a colleague who is interested, his company provides a service that helps customers, process the data that's available to them, but they're not getting help from utilities. It's coming from, private sector folks who are trying to, offer services that the utilities not offering. So that's a lot more of a comment than I intended, especially since I didn't hear most of the presentation.
All right. Anybody else have any comments or questions for any of these guys?
I would just sort of build on that comment. This is Michael. Sorry.
I'm Michael. Okay, sure. Please introduce yourself. That's Kerry Braun that was just speaking, right, Terry?
That's right. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, to Terry's point, though, I mean, there's a Deming quote that people always love to reference, which is like, you can't manage what you don't measure. But that quote is actually truncated. The larger point is that it doesn't matter if it's not tied to corporate strategy. And I think especially within the sort of like smart city context, sometimes we really focus on the measuring stuff and producing the data. But if you're not really doing anything meaningful with it, if you're not changing quality of life, then why bother? What does it matter? And so I think Terry made a really good point, though, in terms of like the smart meter deployment. It might like reduce your truck rolls and reduce your sort of carbon footprint just by not having to go measure stuff, but it's capable of so much more if you can really have it provide actionable, meaningful feedback to the customer.
This is Jerry again. I would piggyback on that. We've moved from very complicated paper bills that nobody reads to online information that nobody looks at. I don't know whether that's progress, but certainly the utility is the agent of change that would make things different. And I'm really delighted to hear what's happening where you are.
So a couple of the things that we're doing with that in Chattanooga, so the EPB developed a product called Spike, the energy watchdog, and they monitor that real-time, the real-time 15-minute interval data from the smart meters, and will actually notify a customer if they have a breakout detection. So if they sort of model what they expect the load profile to be that day based on the average bills and on the weather, and if the energy usage is a certain percentage outside of that model, they'll notify the customer. And so, that's been able to identify failed compressors on heat pumps. That's managed to identify somebody who had an ice melt system in their driveway and managed to flip the switch on in the middle of the summer. And it has also managed to identify an in-law that was used to gas heat and was visiting a house with electric heat.
This is David. I could add or really emphasize the, you know, some of the points here. I mean, I think this is a situation where, and I'm a little biased as an educator here, that providing new information doesn't necessarily mean that information will be useful or used, even though it has that potential to be so. And I think we're in early days of this, trying to figure out, you know, how is it that this really rich new data source can be applied. And as I think I mentioned before, the gentleman was talking, was able to get onto the call, you know, our experience in the community efforts with smart metering installation here and the data has been that, you know, there haven't been that many hiccups, but that there also hasn't been that much really useful. The information that's provided is kind of fun and interesting for those who are really into it, but it doesn't really seem to be connected with much behavioral change on the part of, in terms of things like demand shifting or so on, which does not mean that potential doesn't exist. But I think that, you know, in the examples that Michael just gave of being able to track particularly major, anomalies, I think is really high. And would probably be something you could easily bring to the attention of somebody who could fix it or change something to reduce energy use in response to that. I think there's a really fundamental problem, though, particularly with household-level information like this, which is that fundamentally a very large proportion of the users aren't going to be interested in this information. Because it's just not a big enough deal to them, even if they can save some money. I'm speaking not from experience with this technology, but from looking at a lot of other kinds of similar kinds of efforts in the past, trying to get consumers to change behavior. I think for large-scale users, it's gonna offer significant short-term potential. But I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done to figure out how can there be essentially kind of management agreements made between consumers and the utilities about when information is popping up that a normal everyday household owner will not really want to pay close attention to, that there can some be actionable behavior based on it, sort of as a pre-agreement of some kind. And load shifting is one of those examples, but there might be other ones.
Anybody?
This is Rob. I'm trying to make some broader links here than maybe are appropriate, but I'm really interested in what Chattanooga has done. They seem to be leading in a number of interesting areas, and I'm interested in resilient systems, which they seem to be doing really interesting things. I've been recently thinking about California's recent pass of SB 100 that says we're going to be all electric by 2045. And we have no idea of the complexity of doing that. But one of the things is that we're going to become increasingly dependent upon small PV systems or homeowner PV systems or even medium-sized PV systems that are privately owned. And smart meters ought to be used by the utility to help the consumer make sure that those things are working and working properly. I have a 15-year-old system on my house, and it occasionally goes down for one reason or another, and I may miss that for weeks or months if I don't go out and look at the inverter, and which I do on a regular basis. But really, the PG&E, my power supplier, really ought to tell me when it goes down. They ought to be able to detect that, tell me, and encourage me to fix it, because that's to their benefit to get the energy that I'm supplying.
This is Craig Lewis. I wanted to chime in on the prior comment about essentially, you know, how do you get people to pay attention and change their behavior. And I think it comes down to price. We need to set rates so that people will actually get, they will get charged, and they'll get a benefit of cheaper energy when they're using it at the right time. And if you look at the net demand curves that the California Independent System Operator, CAISO, publishes every day, right? They have real-time charts. You go to their website right now and you get the real-time charts. It'll show you what the total demand is that's being served by CAISO, which basically means over the transmission grid, and then it'll show you what the net demand is, which is the total demand minus the solar and wind that's being produced in California. And overall total peak, because that's what drives the cost of the transmission grid, right? If you start to, you know, grow your peak, total peak usage, then the utility is going to have an excuse to go build a bunch more expensive transmission. And then every other part of the day, season, year, whatever, you want to be using energy when you're producing the most renewables, and particularly when you're overproducing renewables versus the demand that is not already satisfied by some archaic must take contracts that are put in there from the old fossil fuel power plants that basically get first priority, which is a ridiculous situation that we need to correct in California. But in any case, right, you basically use price signals to and rates, right, rate tariffs that are structured to change people's behavior. Otherwise, if they're just being stupid, right, then they should pay more, right? They're basically they're the cause of the grid being more expensive, and they should pay for it.
This is David. I agree. I didn't actually hear everything you said because your voice cut out a couple times, but I think I got the gist of it, and certainly agree 100% about the absolute critical importance of pricing, offering price incentives to consumers as a source of behavioral change, and I think that there's a lot of potential there, and the utilities are really, at least our utility, and I know a lot of other utilities in New York responding to the state policy, are very interested in how to use, and these are mostly investor-owned utilities that I'm talking about. They're very interested in using smart metering and a smart grid more generally to do what you're talking about. And I think particularly with fairly large users, there's some work that's been done around that, and there's enormous potential for that. And I think with small users, there will be many who are price sensitive, but for better or worse, a lot of them are just, you know, it doesn't make a big enough difference for them to want to pay a lot of attention to it, even to respond to the price signals. You know, it's an empirical question, though, which I think, how big does the price signal need to be for small users, like at the residential level, for a large number of them, or a large enough number of them to respond to the kinds of programs that the utilities can offer?
We're getting a lot of background noise from some phones. You want to kind of check to make sure you're on mute, anybody who's not actually speaking. So go ahead.
So this is Karen Eggerman. I just have a comment about the price sensitivity. I think larger users, like one of the developers I'm working with, they're more price sensitive, but their businesses in their commercial sector run during the day. So, and now they're putting in a battery to help with the peak demand period late in the afternoon and putting their solar into that so they can run off the battery during that time. But individual users, unless and until we get our, all our appliances to be smart appliances so that when you're at work and you can say, start the washer, a lot of people, there's nobody at home in the household all day to use the energy at the lower times, and people get home at that high time. So unless we start changing our work schedules and the way people do things and the other tools they have available, it, for some people that's pretty difficult, to use the majority of their energy earlier in the day when they're not at home. So I think, we have other cultural changes to make as well. And some of that will be with tools and instruments and, other smart things that pull in. And some of it is just going to take education.
This is David again. I think what you're pointing out is really important, and it's, it points to kind of the relationship between smart meters and smart grids and what some people call the Internet of Things. And I think the people who are working hard on, within the energy space about installing smart meters in the smart grid are looking ahead to some extent to the kind of capacity that you're talking about, and this is even in part of, it's already there in a very small way in part of our local program, that, you'll be able to manage your appliance use from your smartphone based on signals that you're getting about that usage. Or if you're on vacation, you might be able to change the pattern of various lights going on and off or whatever. So I think that there is a clear sense that the future that you were referring to is being envisioned right now, and pricing, as the previous speaker said, price signals that are associated with that information will be critical in enabling and giving the incentives for people to install some of these smart devices in their homes that will be able to take advantage of the information. But it's not all going to happen, in a one-year time period. It's going to be a rollout as people's habits and expenditure patterns and their appliance turnovers, as they replace what they have now in their homes with new kinds of appliances, that's all going to take a while.
Any comments? I'd like to address the safety and privacy issue on that. What do people think about that? It seems like it could be a serious issue. Smart meters, particularly, and connections to cell phones.
Well, I think there, I don't have much deeply informed to say. Well, I will say that, if you Google smart meters or use a search engine to find it, one of the first things you're going to run across is organizations that are concerned about radio transmissions and its effect on health. I don't know anything specifically about the science of that, but I do know that it's a public concern that will need to be dealt with as these things are installed. And I think the privacy issue is an even bigger one than that one, significantly bigger. And that has to do with levels of trust in large institutions, which are pretty low. But nonetheless, I would also say in our community, which is pretty suspicious of large private utilities, there has not been a lot of strong pushback against the installation of smart meters despite that. And for those who don't know, I'm in a very liberal university town.
So was that an opt-out situation?
Yes. Any you know, every household within this one area of the city and county was essentially automatically opted in by the utility, but it was a fairly easy process to say, hey, I don't want to participate. And they did get, I don't know the exact participation rate, but they got a very high participation rate. But there were also, you know, there's been discussion on listservs, and there are, you know, it's a public level concern about what are they going to do with all this information. And it's not assuming that everybody's going to use it just for beneficial purposes from the perspective of the consumer.
Any other comments on this? Tom, we haven't heard from you. Are you still there?
This is Jerry. I'm coming in from a different direction on safety and privacy. I want to just focus quickly on smart meters. And one thing that would be an immediate improvement in both the data and the usability of the data would be, you know, we're in a community with literally our city and county have about 10% of the residential and commercial customers have solar hooked up behind the meter. And the smart meters are not smart enough to actually tell you, and it's not the meter's fault. I'm making a general comment, but the smart meters are not telling us, they're telling us our net consumption, net of the solar production on site. It would be so much more helpful to be able to also know the solar production, and especially when we were going into the time of use metering that California envisions and so forth. So there's a problem with not using the data and having to have new new processes, and I agree it's going to take some time, but it's also that measuring the right things, measuring a complete picture as opposed to just what is of interest to the to the investor-owned utility, which is legitimately net consumption, but to the customer, there are other things of interest.
I will just add to that that I can't verify this from personal experience or knowledge, but our utility claims that you can get both of those measures, including on-site generation and net.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. That's good to know.
But I don't know, you know, what technology it is that enables them specifically to do that, or how they report it.
Well, I don't either. But I suspect there are smart meters that could, eventually be able to measure what's happening on each circuit. And that's what, that would be the next level, the next generation of smart metering, I would think. And because one of the circuits is the circuit, that is the solar, the inverter is on the on its own circuit, but it's behind the meter, so you have to measure what's going on individuals' on-site circuits as opposed to just the total interconnected, the main circuit.
Right, and That actually brings up the question maybe some more technically oriented people know, but I remember as long as 5 or 10 years ago listening to some debates about, or not debates, but some, you know, there's direct measurement, which is what I think you're referring to, but there's also a lot that can be deduced about, but just from the pattern of overall energy use, about what the draws on the energy are, using pretty sophisticated pattern recognition programs. So that's just an addition to what you just said.
Well, and one thing that needs to happen, I think, is that it is not as complicated as you would imagine it to be, because the main uses are basically heating, lighting, cooling in a home, and probably in a commercial situation as well. Without even any software, you can pretty much deduce where the main action is, and what's causing, and you can also, you can also use the kind of some very crude, simplistic techniques to kind of isolate what's happening with heating or what's happening with lighting or what have you. You don't need precision, but I think most people don't even have a sense of proportions. I don't think most people probably could tell you how much of their usage is one thing or another. And we need to get to that next level of customer awareness, if you will. And part of that is, what could be helped in terms of the what information is available on your bill and so forth, and helping people understand their bills and helping people understand the information that's downloadable from the measurements.
Yeah, I think everything you said is really important, and I think there's a lot of work that still needs to happen and is being explored right now and experimented with in these places that are doing it, like our community and Chattanooga, to figure out essentially how do you make this information usable and useful to the various possible users, not first and foremost the consumer of the electricity, or in our case they're also monitoring natural gas. So
anything else? Seems like what's happening in Chattanooga is extremely important, and as far as consumers are concerned, the utility notifying them when there's some kind of abnormal usage of energy on their bill, or just notifying them in some way, makes the most sense to me, because I think you're right. Most people probably don't read all the details in their bill to find out what's going on. Any other comments here?
I would just add, I'm pretty convinced that there's potential not only for abnormal use, but for identifying normal uses that are inefficient, that could be maybe not a big deal, but you might be able to sort of say, hey, if you continue this pattern of use over time, you are spending a lot more money, for example, and we have a way you can save a lot of money, but like determining how to incentivize that financially and then communicate it to the customer beyond a simple price signal for these things that don't show up as big anomalies, I think is something that people are working on, and I'm assuming that it will become more effective rather than less effective over time, but it's not there yet.
Anything else?
This is Greg again.
Go ahead. This is.
Real quick. The idea that I've always liked is you have a baseline. Every household has a baseline. This kind of gets around the social justice issue that was brought up a little bit earlier. You have a baseline usage amount, and then once you go above the baseline, then you basically have, ideally, real-time pricing, but as a proxy to real-time pricing, you have time-of-use pricing. But you allow every household to kind of use energy when they need to, up to a certain limit, and then above that, you make sure that it's really clear that if you use energy at the peak time of day, you're going to spend four times more than you are if you're using energy at the off-peak time, which is, in California, that is the rate differential. It's a 4X between peak and off-peak.
This is Michael Walton again. I know one of the things that Oak Ridge National Labs is looking at with EPB is using the sort of very fine-grained smart meter data to do virtual energy modeling for the house. Using a load profile, sort of like Sense. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that product. It's like a energy monitoring software and hardware that basically tries to identify what certain loads are within your house and then give suggestions for how to optimize that. So that is something that we're working on. And then the other thing that I just wanted to sort of point out, we see sort of two very different relationships with utility bills. For middle and high income residents in Chattanooga, it's just what people have talked about. Not only do they not look at their bills because they don't get them, they're, email or online, but they're on auto pay. And so they don't even, they literally have no feedback mechanism through just the normal bill paying process. They literally don't even see it. But then the other version, or the low-income neighborhoods that we work in, where there's a very visceral relationship with utility bills in that you get high rates of cutoff and 43% more energy use per square foot in the winter than the average home in Chattanooga. We were able to use the smart grid data to actually identify the neighborhoods that we would go in to do sort of deep community engagement around community energy efficiency and provide workshops, outreach, canvassing, as well as just do a better job of connecting people to resources that are available. So I think there's a lot of things that you can start to do with that kind of information.
Anybody else?
Well, I think that was this is David again. I think that was a really important point that Michael just made, and it's kind of talks about, to me, it points out the need to be smart about different kinds of audiences and their needs and incentives and capacities. And even within the one, I would ask Michael a question back because I think that, one of the other issues you run into in doing, I assume you did, in the kind of work that you're doing is this. Often in, it's, when you're not going into communities where people own their own homes all the time, or if you're going into communities that are mostly apartments, there can be problems essentially with who pays the bill versus who uses the energy. I'm wondering if you ran into that in the work you were doing.
Oh, yeah. we're neck deep in that. We're working with, so our the way we're trying to address that, we've got a few different programs. All of our programming is targeted toward renters and homeowners, but we wanted to make sure that everything we do is specifically applicable to renters as well. If if possible. And so, but one of the things that we're working on is a policy solution that requires a bare minimum level of energy efficiency for any rental unit in the city using the sort of business license laws, so that we can sort of set standards for that. It's been effective in Memphis, Tennessee, as well as other places like Boulder and Burlington. And so we have some good precedents that we're modeling it after. We feel like we have enough support from council, but we hope to get a vote on that by the end of this year. And then we're also working on things like Green Healthy Homes Initiative to pay for the improvements using healthcare savings, so that you're not asking a landlord to shell out thousands of dollars that they're not going to get back because they're not paying the electric bill. We can use healthcare savings to pay for some of those improvements.
I think that's really an intriguing idea, using the healthcare savings for energy efficiency.
Yeah.
Okay, we only have a few more minutes left, and we're going to have a couple more conference calls coming up pretty quick here. One's Monday, October 1st, talking about facilitating renewable energy in cities and utilities and getting them to work better. And we have a few people on that panel, including Sherry Reuter, Richard Riebstein, and Jerry, who is on the call now, and then Deborah Rowe, who is not a member yet, but she is an extraordinarily interesting lady. I think people want to hear what she has to say. And the other call is going to be on October 4th, and it's similar to the webinar that we're going to have on October 3rd, and Tom Stanton, National Regulatory Research Institute, who's also on this call right now, will be presenting on the panel along with Baird Brown and Larissa Dobriansky. And Craig, I didn't know if you were going to be on that panel or not.
I'm planning to.
Okay, I'll put you on the list then. So we'll have Craig on the panel, and talking about, current research on microgrid regulatory policy, and the webinar on October 3rd is going to be a similar topic with Stan presenting. So anyhow, thanks for everybody for coming, and keep looking for the emails on the upcoming webinar, upcoming conference calls. And hope you can all make it. Thanks to everybody for coming today, and thanks to the panelists for giving interesting presentations on a topic I think is very important.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thanks, Sierra.
Thanks, Sierra.
Thank you, Sierra.